You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, man, I was just like rushing back in the room getting my coffee, Boomer. I was just
you didn't stop. You were working all the way up to just a second. Like,
woo! Okay, can't start the show without a cup of coffee.
That's right.
That's part of the Right Side rations. That's how we run things around here. Yes. Well, for me, how you doing, bud?
I'm good.
Good.
Pretty day, and I'm here. I'm ready for the show today.
It's gonna be a good one too.
It is.
Hey, folks, we're pretty excited. So at 3 o'clock today on today's show, we're airing the interview that we did just a couple of days ago, and then Boomer spent time getting it all edited so it fits right in our time slots. With Stephen Curtis Chapman. He's been literally a Grammy Award-winning, multi-Dove Award-winning Christian recording artist now for, 30-something years. Never fails to put out good material. I don't know about y'all, but Christian music in my household included his stuff just like since our kids were little. You, Boomer, you too, I guess.
Huh? Oh, absolutely. When I was little, that's what I grew up
on. Of course, he sang in your wedding too, so yes, that was pretty cool.
That was pretty awesome.
Well, I love the fact you have a connection with him, so that was good. Anyway, we got an interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman. It's coming on at 3 o'clock. You're going to want to hear it. That is literally part of today's Triple Dipper, so speaking of which, hit it.
The Triple Dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, we're running with today. Number one, I'm calling it home fries. Every once in a while, I look around and realize, you know, I've been talking about things like China, we've been talking about things in D.C. Man, there's a bunch of stuff happening around our state, some of which I thought, that's just newsworthy, that's worth pointing out, that's interesting. And so literally, I got a series of stories all about where we live. I just call it home fries. Y'all stay tuned for that. That'll be number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two is that interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman. I mean, we cover everything from how he got going, what his family life was like coming up, why did he get into music, how does he stay in music after all this time? Is it still fresh, or is it, you know, just does he have to drag himself to work? No, I think you're going to enjoy this. And it's really a testimony not just to his longevity in one industry. It's a testimony to anybody who's got a calling. And Stephen Curtis Chapman interview number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, off the rails. You might imagine what that's about. This whole railroad strike thing just irks the stew out of me. So we're going to spend some time unpacking that. What does it mean for us? What does it mean to the economy? Oh, by the way, I thought we were done with this before the elections. Huh, funny how that worked out. So, yep, number three on the Triple Dipper, off the rails. All right, let me jump over to my opening here, and I got to tell you, this one is going to come across a little strong to some, but generally speaking, I would hazard that there are two main reasons for someone to tell an untruth, to lie about anything. Here's the two reasons, I think. Number one, that person is fearful of what will happen if the truth becomes known. Or number two, they just don't think the listeners of the lie can handle the truth. Well, both are awful, and both breed distrust and uncertainty. And truth is also a character indicator. I mean, what is that person's reputation for truthfulness and veracity? When they become known for lies, it is generally considered a stain on their character, right? A person's propensity for truthfulness, well, that matters. If someone is scared of what the truth will mean and they don't otherwise have the strength of character to face that fear, they lie. Would you want someone to be in charge of your life, your job, your church, your politics, if they don't have the spine to see bad news and deal with it head on? There's an old saying that I was taught as a young Army officer that bad news does not get better with time. Real leaders confront the consequences and deal with them. Cowards put their head in the sand and hope it all goes away. And a lie is the quick and easy way of putting one's head in the sand. But the other excuse, I said, the grounds for a lie being built on the notion that the others who would be impacted by the truth just can't handle it. Well, there's an arrogance in that. is like the arrogant character played by Jack Nicholson in the movie A Few Good Men, who shouted out with disgust in open court, "You can't handle the truth." It shows a disdain, a dislike, a distrust of others, which somehow makes it rationalized to be okay to utter a lie. And it's not okay. So again, number one, a lie because, one, they fear the impact of the truth, or two, they don't trust or believe in others to be able to handle the truth, so they lie. And like I said, neither excuse is excusable. And by the way, don't be fooled by the old adage that there's a possibility of a little white lie. Years ago, when I was a rookie lawyer, I was working for an older lawyer who had been trying cases for years. And I'll never forget one day we were in court. I was assisting him with a trial, and we had just caught the opposition in a lie earlier on the stand. And my boss got up to make his closing arguments to the jury, and he led off by saying that when he was young, his grandfather was one of his major influences. And his grandfather used to tell him, "You lie about a little, you lie about a lot." And I've used that line several times since then. So does it change in politics? Is it excusable to spin things? I had a friend once that I was talking with about the public statements of someone in state politics. The person I was talking to said something to the effect of, "Well, I guess that's politics," to which I replied, "No, it's still a lie." There is no acceptable setting, including politics, for intentional mistruths. Now that I've laid that foundation, has anyone noticed the constant stream of mistruths coming from the Biden administration? Are they scared of the consequences? Do they arrogantly believe that we just can't handle the truth? What got me started on this today was the pair of stories that broke just this week about lobster. You heard me, lobster. Maine lobster, to be exact. The other day in a segment right here on Right Side Radio, I featured a story about Whole Foods taking Maine lobster off its shelves. No more Maine lobster at Whole Foods because activists had convinced Whole Foods the right whales were endangered by lobster fishermen. So Joe Biden had committed to the lobster fishermen during his 2020 campaign. He would defend them to the nth degree. But he has yet to meet with a delegation from Maine on this issue. Instead, his entire focus has turned to empowering green activism, and as a result, that industry just took a major hit. But yet, in an incredible move of ambiguity and indifference, Biden is hosting his first state dinner for French President Macron, and top of the menu, 200 Maine lobsters. So what is it? What's the truth? He will eat and serve Maine lobster, but he won't openly defend fishing for Maine lobster. It only gets worse from there. Yesterday, in a statement that has yet to be explained or walked back, Presidential Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said that Joe Biden has been to the southern border. What? There are actually zero records anywhere that say he has been to the southern border. The truth is he hasn't. So why say it? Are they scared of the truth that he hasn't been there, or they arrogantly believe we can't handle the truth? Also yesterday, John Kirby, the former press secretary, Pentagon press secretary, now serving as the coordinator for communications of the National Security Council, made the amazing statement that Russia and China were likely in awe of the United States after watching how quickly the exit from Afghanistan took place. What? How is the Biden administration able to put out statements like that when the world knows that Biden's own Department of Defense just issued a statement this very week that said that the exit from Afghanistan was so bad, that China had been using it as a propaganda tool to convince world leaders that we could not be counted on any longer to be a good ally. And yet he's saying, somehow, that they're admiring it. But perhaps the icing on the cake came this week when President Biden himself called on Congress to intervene in the brewing railroad strike. The railroad unions are holding out. More is needed to bring that potentially economically devastating situation to an amicable close. But wait, think back just a few weeks. Is this not the same railroad union negotiation that President Biden had a Rose Garden press conference for just a few weeks ago to announce that his administration had successfully wrapped it up? So was that rhetoric just to pave the way for the midterm elections? In any event, it wasn't true, was it? Now, these are not small mistruths. These aren't little white lies. These are major policy points that affect things like our economy, our military strength, and certainly our international image and the public trust in the office of the presidency. This is a pattern. It's been known for so many years that Joe Biden will embellish his stories to help himself be, what, more relatable, I guess? Like things like fighting with corn pop, finishing top of his class, playing college football, accepted to the Naval Academy. His son died in Iraq. On and on and on. And people have continued to excuse those little white lies, and they have put them off as just old Joe, just old school politics. No, they were lies. And now we have the man who's been lying for years without constraint or correction. A man who, by the way, has never, ever, ever led anything, any organization in his whole life. A man who has built a life on lying about a little is now in charge of an administration that seems to perpetually lie about a lot. And there is no good excuse. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. And I guarantee you there's folks out there going, "Woo, Phil bringing it on thick today." Yes, yes I am. Just felt like it had to be said. I couldn't believe it when I watched this morning and saw that so far the White House has been silent in the face of Whole Foods saying no more Maine lobster because environmentalists have driven them to drop it from their rolls. But yet the Biden administration is going to serve 200 lobster from Maine at the state dinner. You look at all of it. And all those things I told you about, they happened just this week, in 1 week. Southern border? No. Afghanistan withdrawal? Good? No. Rail strike? Still on. More to come. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. And wow, I'll tell you what, we got some content on today's show that I'm pretty excited about. This interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman is also probably one of my favorite moments so far in the time we've been doing the show. I love it when we get these special guests in. Of course, they make the flow, you know, go well. They also sort of bring a new flavor to it. But I'm going to tell you, if we do what we're supposed to do on this show, we're going to do what I like to call the four E's. We're going to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain you on what it means to walk the walk and talk as a conservative in today's world. And so, yeah, I get the biggest kick out of some of that. Boomer, how much time did you have to spend? Now, granted, when we did the Ted Nugent interview, there was a little extra editing that had to take place.
Well, there was some bleeping in that one.
There weren't no bleeping on Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Oh, no, there was no bleeping in that. Just, you know, just fun old editing. Anybody in the post-production world, they understand.
Just making it fit. What you just had making to do. It fit. All you had to That's do was all... make that square peg fit in that round hole and you're good to go.
That's right.
All right. Well, good enough. And by the way, it's audio and video, y'all.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you want to watch it, you can go to our website, rightsideradio.org, and the live stream is on the show right now. And come the 3 o'clock hour, boom, Boomer's going to have it up there. You can actually watch the interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman if you want to. And that's available every day. And then I guess that'll be posted to the podcast later tonight too, right?
Yep. It'll be the whole segment will be up there.
Outstanding.
Yeah. All right, that'd be awesome for everybody to hear.
Speaking of the podcast, I got people already texting me saying, how many push-ups you gonna do? I ain't scared, but no, it looks like I'm doing some. So what do we come down to? Where are we at right now?
We're at 97,500.
Dude.
So close.
Dude. That was close. All right, so last night's show has now been downloaded. Mm-hmm. That means that I have officially not met my milestone of having 100,000 downloads by the end of the year. Rats.
Rats.
By a mere 2,500.
But it still will hit very soon.
Oh, it will. There's it no will. Doubt. There's no doubt. All right, Boomer. So if I recall correctly, you like chocolate glazed and normal donuts.
That's right.
I think
just normal donuts. Normal glazed donuts.
Just normal?
Yeah.
So if I go down there and say, I need a dozen normal donuts, they'll know exactly what I mean.
Or those, you know, what you can pop really easy are those donut holes.
Oh, are you being selective now?
I'm not being selective. I'm just saying if they're out of everything else, obviously I would go for donut holes too.
Paul from Athens says I got to drop and do 25, and he also says apple fritters. Apple fritters are actually my favorite. So, but by the way, though, that's one of the things, though, dude. One of the things is you've got your piece.
I still gotta hit it before the 10th.
So if we don't hit 100,000 by the 10th, you're doing push-ups on top of the ones I already did.
And then I guess we'll bring donuts
for me to eat.
Yeah, for you to eat and Alicia over here.
I prefer apple fritters.
Apple fritters.
You know what, though? I'm pretty sure you're going to do fine. I feel certain that you're going to. I hesitate to put a date on it now that I've already failed at my date settings. But I feel certain you're going to wind up making yours and
then some. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Because the audience will probably swarm to your aid.
They're going to help. They're going to help me, right? Right, guys?
That's my thing.
And the Stephen Curtis podcast won't help me at all.
Not a bit.
Not a bit.
That's going to be a downloadable. I think Ted Nugent is still one of our most downloaded. I think General Boykins was a very heavily downloaded. Yeah, and listen, by the way, I say all that, back to being serious here for a second. If you're a podcaster or if you hear one and you like it, you can send it to somebody. Like, you can go in there, click the link, and a lot of times these podcasts, like we use Podbean a lot. If you use Podbean, it has an opportunity on there for you to send a podcast to somebody. You can just click the little symbol for send. I'm not sure why they chose that little symbol, but anyway, you click on it and it goes ka-dink by email or upload to Twitter or social media, wherever you want. Doesn't matter. All I'm saying is this. Go to our website, rightsideradio.org, and all that stuff's on there, all the podcasts. Boomer uploads them every single day. We break the show down into compartmentalized pieces, short podcasts. And then you also now are also uploading the full show in case somebody wants the full show, right?
Yep, the full show, so then you can hear it from beginning to end.
Ba-bam, ba-bam.
Yep.
The alpha to the omega. All right. And so the Stephen Curtis Chapman and other stuff will also be on there by tonight, I guess. Tonight, you think?
Tonight.
All right, tonight. So rightsideradio.org, got all our stuff. All our stuff. All y'all.
All of it.
Get on down there to rightsideradio.org. I like to tell folks, I used to say it all the time, if you find yourself getting outside of the overly broad range of our AM/FM capabilities, you can also live stream the show from there. Go to wherever you are in the world, go to the whole wide world, go to the World Wide Web, click on rightsideradio.org, click on Listen Live, and no matter where you is, there we is what I used to always say. How'd I get away from that? I used to say that every day. We got the new studio, and I guess I got too big for my britches, and I just forgot to say, no matter where you is, there we is.
Hey, you've said it a few times.
Okay.
Just got away from it just for the past couple weeks.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, when we get back from this next break, folks, I'm going to jump right into some home cooking here, some home fries, I call it. I'm sure John from Huntsville is going to say, you're talking about food again. Yes, I am.
Home fries. I really like this dipper when we get into the, what's happening around here.
That's what we're doing.
I like
it. It's all about stuff that's happening around the home front. So, yeah, the first half hour or so here, number one of the Triple Dipper. Home fries. What's happening right here in Alabama? Things that are worth seeing and knowing and just kind of being amazed by. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about we are down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee. Where am I saying here? Georgia, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi. Lord, I had somebody calling my cell phone. I was trying to turn it off while I'm talking. Apparently, I can't multitask. By the way, hey, I just got a text a minute ago, Bud, from Travis from Just Love Coffee. With response, he was talking about how he was driving up somewhere, and so he had to go ahead and listen to the show on the live stream.
Yeah.
And he said, and wherever I was, there you was.
I like it.
Nice. First part of the Triple Dipper, home fries. Home fries, things that are happening around about town, you know what I'm saying? Things that are happening around here. Stuff that happens that you might want to know about right here in your own home state. So what about, our own Attorney General, who is continuing to fight the good fight. Now, I love this. I mean, every time I turn around, Steve Marshall is literally seems like he is going after the woke wars. You know what I'm saying? So storyline, here's come off of 1819 News today. So A.G. Marshall is applauding the Federal Appeals Court for upholding the injunction that protects religious vaccine exemptions for U.S. Air Force members. Glad of it. Now, Attorney General Marshall has been literally leading that fight now since the day it started, calling on the courts, calling on the Biden administration to make changes, to recognize that the vaccine mandate on the military is debilitating to the military, is demoralizing to the personnel. It has a negative impact upon our nation's ability to protect itself. And when it comes to our National Guard, it impacts our ability for the state to also protect itself, you know, natural disasters and that kind of thing. Well, on Tuesday of this week, the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a previous injunction that protected members of the U.S. Air Force from being disciplined for not getting the vaccine for religious reasons. And, of course, that was part of a lawsuit that A.G. Marshall was supportive of. So, A.G. Marshall says, in March, a federal district court ruled in their favor, placing a preliminary injunction barring the Air Force from disciplining any member for claiming a religious liberty exemption to the vaccine mandate. Yay. Good stuff. Of course, what happened? The Air Force appealed it. I mean, it boggles the mind. You look at it and go, I guess on the one hand, Air Force, you don't want these people anymore, and so you're willing just to pursue it to the nth degree, but don't you also recognize what you're doing to readiness? But then again, they are bound to follow the orders of the commander-in-chief, so there's that. So, according to the court opinion upholding the injunction, the Air Force granted no religious exemptions to anyone who did not plan to leave the service within a year. And the judge said this. The judge says the Air Force's bare-bones argument does nothing to show the district court abused its discretion, that's the lower court, by temporarily prohibiting it from engaging in any disciplinary separation actions. By the way, this is not just the first time. This has been happening. Thank you, A.G. Marshall, by the way, for standing up for the military on the vaccine mandates. Also be aware, too, in January of this year, another district court judge, federal district court judge, ruled, where'd it go? In favor of, 35 Navy SEALs who had requested religious accommodation on the vaccine themselves. This is an ongoing battle. It's been proven that there is nothing within the context of mandating a shot that will stop you from getting it. You're not stopping transmissibility in the ranks. You're not. And the effects of COVID have now gotten to the point that they are endemic. They're no longer pandemic. They're endemic. They're just here. It's like the flu. It happens. And so the idea that we're going to continue to end careers and diminish readiness and hurt recruiting, there you go. Here's another story from AL.com. Total change of subject. Brace yourselves. Here we go. 82-year-old woman arrested for not paying her trash bill. Did you see this from Boomer when I was putting it together?
I did, and I had to read part of it because I was like, whoa, this for real?
Yeah, this is for real. Down in Valley, a small town down there near Lee County, I think that area near Auburn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alabama Police Department in Valley drew outrage after its police chief announced the arrest of an 82-year-old woman who did not pay her trash bill, and he announced it on social media. Culprit has been detained.
The 82-year-old woman has been detained.
Yeah, for not paying her trash bill. Valley Police Chief Mark Reynolds claimed the department's hands were tied on whether to handcuff Martha Lewis Minifield after a magistrate signed off on her arrest for a failure to pay trash, adding that the 82-year-old woman was treated respectfully by our officers in the performance of their duties. Well, I'm glad. Chief, I gotta ask, was this really your priority for the day? The chief says, while our officers can use their discretionary judgment on certain matters, the enforcement of an arrest warrant issued by the court and signed by a magistrate is not one of them. You can imagine how people replied to him on Facebook. Not generally in his favor, if you know what I'm saying.
Nope.
And people are also questioning, why didn't the city just discontinue her trash pickup? It was that big of a deal.
Why didn't they just stop? If she hasn't paid, just stop the trash pickup.
I don't have an answer for you, brother. I am right there with you with the my level of perplexion.
You don't pay your power bill, don't they just stop service?
I'm told, yes.
I figure they would.
Well, that's I don't know. Apparently doesn't work that way down yonder in Valley.
Nope.
Not in Valley, Alabama. They take it serious. They'll cuff you and take you to jail for not paying that garbage dues. All right, next story, AL.com. Again, I got two from AL.com. It's, you know, there's whole weeks I go by without recording a story from AL.com. So the Birmingham Waterworks Board. Okay. Birmingham Waterworks Board. In case you have not been tracking some of the stories we've had on this show about the Birmingham Waterworks Board, they do not just service Birmingham. They serve five counties. They are one of the biggest of the smallest utilities. In other words, they're not Alabama Power. They're not statewide. They're not TVA. But they're huge, nonetheless. Something like 770,000 people are serviced by the Birmingham Waterworks Board. Yeah. And if you live in Jefferson, Blount, St. Clair, Shelby, and I'm missing one, maybe Walker County, I think, you may very well be serviced by the Birmingham Waterworks Board. Well, they're raising your rates. Despite all of the corruption, despite all of the mismanagement, despite all of the massive fees they've been spending on consultants and PR and trying to save face in the eyes of the public, they decided the best thing they could do is go ahead and raise your rates. So a 3.9% increase for ratepayers will begin in 2023. Wow. The general manager says, a critical factor for the rate increase is demand for consumption, which, like the rest of the country, we see continuing to decline. What? Okay. First of all, ain't nobody's house that turned off the tap, all right? So consumption declining. What about, are there people that perhaps have switched their water service to another utility? Very rarely. Only if the community local board is no longer getting its water through Birmingham Waterworks Board, all right? Like we saw a few years ago up in Etowah County, the Rainbow City Water Board said they were tired of Gadsden's water board selling them water at a higher rate, and they just ran a pipe to St. Clair County just south of them, and they got a better rate with well water and not river water. So that can happen. But what we're really seeing is the population in the urban areas that were in and around Birmingham is likely declining. We saw that in the census. And so what are they doing? They're raising the rates to accommodate. Wow. So the Birmingham Waterworks Board able to decrease their 2023 capital budget by 26.2%, but their O&M budget went up 8.12%. So it's that's not a help. So they dropped their capital budgets. In other words, they're not building stuff, but their operations and management went up. Why would that be? Pray tell. Maybe it's because they've been spending millions of dollars, millions, on consultants and PR firms trying to rehab their very negative image. And then on top of that, the Biden administration's inflation has caused the chemicals they use to treat the water to go up also. So there's that. Birmingham Waterworks Board, stand by. You're getting more, or actually you're getting less for more. How about that? Okay, let's talk some football.
Football.
There we go. Around about the state, doing some home fries here, number one on the Triple Dipper. Football. UAB's got a new coach. It ain't just Auburn. UAB's got a new coach. Now, I remember a few years ago, remember, you were still in Tennessee at the time, up there in Nashville, mm-hmm. when you were sojourning in the wilderness. Were you tracking back then that UAB football almost went away completely?
I was.
Yeah.
Because I had a couple friends and, you know, my siblings' friends that were at UAB at the time.
Yeah, the University of Alabama system trustees didn't really like the idea that there was a competitive program within the UA system. Never mind that they weren't competing with Nick Saban.
Right.
But they still needed resources and they still needed attention. And so, you know, there was a lot of angst, apparently.
As they weren't getting that much attention. Okay,
yeah. But the community threw a fit. And
yeah.
And you know, maybe part of this was leverage. Maybe the UA system trustees said, well, if you're not going to have good facilities for us to play in, why should we be there? You know, Legion Field's getting tired. But anyway, bottom line, UAB football, with all the support in the world and then an increase in facilities and increased notoriety, came back, and they have come back pretty well.
Pretty strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are they? They're a D2 team, I guess, right
D2.
Now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trent Dilfer, who has been coaching high school. So he's popping up from the high school. But he was a former professional football player, mm-hmm. Played in the NFL, played college at Fresno State, played in the NFL. He's been coaching at Lipscomb Academy in Tennessee. The interesting thing is his record there, he went to a program that was 3-19, and he's leaving with his record being 43-10 right after he got there. He's third consecutive year this year that he's taken his team to the state title game and Class 2 AA state championships. Bottom line is he's got a great record. I love this part, though. If Charlene's listening, I can so relate to this, because this sounds like a conversation we might have even had this morning, just to be honest with you. He was telling his wife, he says, you know, I think we're where we need to be. I mean, I think high school is where it's at. We're changing kids' lives. We feel good about it. But he said, she looked at me and said, well, that's true, but I want you to think about something. You were made for more, and you've done what you can here where we're at. I want you to stretch yourself, and I want you to listen. That was his wife.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Phew.
Find the right woman, and you will go places. Anyway. And shortly after that, he wound up getting a call from UAB. Bam. And what he thought was going to be a 10-minute call turned into an hour and a half, and next thing you know, he got a job.
Wow.
So very cool. Look forward to see what Coach Dilfer will do. They announced him yesterday.
Hey, he's a cool guy, too. I actually had met him when I was up in Nashville.
No kidding. And is that where Lipscomb Academy was, or what?
Lipscomb Academy is in the Nashville area. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and they were good. They were real good.
Apparently so, under his watch. But then there's also the whole Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze.
All right,
so
tell me.
I'm not going down the straight ticket route of just discussing the ins and outs of his coaching skills and all that. I thought, what does Tommy Tuberville say about this?
Yeah,
it's a fair question.
Yeah, that is a fair question.
When we get back from the break, I'll tell you.
Let's do it.
All right. We'll do it. We'll come back. And then, by the way, it's almost Christmas. If you have a Bama fan and you want to order an actual Bear Bryant hat worn by Bear Bryant from 1967, there's one for sale. I'll tell you about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Home fries. That's where we are in the Triple Dipper. Be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. I got one text here from TC from Priceville. It says, if you're going to talk about some Alabama football, meaning the state, he said, you better mention our Troy Trojans are hosting the Sun Belt Conference Championship game this weekend against Coastal Carolina. Go Troy. Well, TC, I think I just did. So there you go. All right, get her done, Trojans.
Yeah.
All right. There's plenty more where that came from. Home fries. I'm talking about things that happen right here around the good old. By the way, Alabama is beautiful. And I say all the time on this show, I hope you've heard me say it before. If you're not, you're about to hear it now. That you know, we have the mission. The mission is that we do the four E's, that we educate, enlighten, empower, entertain you on what it means to be a conservative walking in today's world. But the mission is really about the message. And the message for me, the reason why I do this, what gets me up in the morning to get ready for, you know, every day's show is another four-parter. And that's that I don't mind ever saying on this show, Jesus is Lord, America is great, Alabama is beautiful, and life is worth living. So, yep, home fries, we're talking about it. Alabama is beautiful. All right, Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze down on the plains. Freeze on the plane. So what's Tuberville think about that? You know, probably the last most successful coach we've had there, I guess, would be Tommy Tuberville. Now, Malzahn, of course, had his time, but Tuberville had one of the best streaks, I think, of an Auburn coach in recent memory. Some will take me to task on that, I feel certain. But so Coach Tuberville, Senator Tuberville, was recently asked, what does he think about his former employer, Auburn University, hiring Hugh Freeze? You know, bated breath. What does the senator say? Pray tell. How will he respond? Well, he responded with class. You can understand. So, Tuberville was the head coach there from 1999 to 2008. He acknowledged that Freeze had some past problems, but he said he knew the coach deserved what he called a second chance. So this is Tuberville. You can hear it in his voice. Yeah, there's been some problems. You know, I've known Hugh Freeze for over 30 years. I knew him when he was a high school coach. He had some problems while he was at Ole Miss, but sometimes you have to give people a second chance. In addition to winning games, Tuberville said Freeze is going to need to show that he is, quote, over his past, and he is, quote, a family man. So, yep, there's that. Coach Tuberville talking about the new Coach Freeze down on the plains. And by the way, I think I said it yesterday during the Grand Council. Something came up about this topic, and I think one of the best things that happened, not just for Hugh Freeze himself personally, was that they decided to keep Carnell Williams and to elevate his position at Auburn, because no one can deny that Carnell brought a breath of fresh air to the team. And morale went through the roof because of his leadership. And I suspect that Hugh Freeze is going to be a decent recruiter, but I suspect that the main recruiting element is going to be Carnell Williams too. I bet Carnell's going to be a recruiting force. His personality is going to win some recruits over, and I hope to see the recruiting class for Auburn go up. All right, Boomer, you're a Bama fan.
Yes, I am.
Would you want to own a real, actual Bear Bryant maroon jacket and or a real, worn by him, Bear Bryant houndstooth hat?
Hat.
You'd want a hat?
That'd be awesome.
Opening bid is currently at $2,500.
Opening bid.
Yes. Do I need to clarify that this is an auction? All right. So AL.com reports that a Bear Bryant houndstooth hat and crimson jacket are up for auction just in time for Christmas. Says, looking for a Christmas present? You or your Crimson Tide buddy can be the owner of a 1967 Bear Bryant personally worn crimson jacket, or maybe a Bear Bryant personally worn houndstooth hat. Leland's 2022 Fall Classic Auction, which runs through the 10th. I assume it's an online auction.
Okay.
All right. They've got a number of, they got a bunch of cool stuff, but for the AL.com purposes and for the show, the top two items are going to wind up being one of those suit jackets that Bear Bryant was known to wear that was maroon in color.
Right.
And it's actually, you know, it's apparently probably custom made. And it's got his name, you know, his tag on the inside and all that kind of stuff. But then the big one is, of course, the hat.
The hat.
Yep. The houndstooth hat that is still the symbol. I mean, like, you can just put a houndstooth hat sticker on your car. People know what it is.
Right. You don't. It doesn't have to have a name or anything.
No A, no nothing.
Yeah. You mean you see ladies walking around with houndstooth jackets all the time. You're like, oh, Bammer. We know you're a Bama fan.
Bammer fan.
Yeah, Bammer fan.
Bammer fan. the hat had a starting bid of $2,500, but it's already up to $3,025.
All right.
Other things you can get, Mean Joe Green's game jersey from the 1975 Super Bowl. That's a good one. Mickey Mantle, Yankees game used batting helmet from 1957. You got other stuff in there. You got some major items. If you're a sports memorabilia fan, this one's for you. And I had a couple more, not the least of which is Alabama just can't seem to be able to kill off its prisoners. And we finally had to put a stop to it. More to come on that. All right, coming up next, interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman. You're going to want to hear this. It's amazing. Y'all stand by. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid conservative, and just plain right.
All Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues, and like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, I tell you, this show has had a blessing of kind of coming along, you know, in the last year and a half and being able to get some amazing guests on to bring. I always tell you, folks, we're going to do everything we can to do what I call the four E's. We're going to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain you with what it means to be a conservative, a Christian in today's world. And so all that to say, our next guest is somebody who I have admired from afar for many years. Singer-songwriter Stephen Curtis Chapman. He's one of those pioneers of Christian music who has made it cool to be a Christian in today's world. And he is starting with his first album, which I believe was called First Hand in 1987. He has spanned the years. You get albums like The Great Adventure, Heaven in the Real World, Speechless, his most recent one this year released is Still, multiple Grammys, GMA Awards. Stephen Curtis Chapman, thanks for joining us on Right Side Radio.
Absolutely. Great to be with you, brother.
Well, thank you. And I got to tell you, by the way, I'm pretty sure that it was not my wife and I getting our kids out of the bed in the morning. It was The Great Adventure. If my son asked for, I mean, every single day, Daddy, can you play Saddle Up Their Horses? Yes. And we would play it again, and they'd be up for the day going to school. That was our intro to the day for years.
I'm glad to know I was able to, help a family get the day going. It's so funny that song in particular, I've had so many great stories of people, man, that was our summer, you know, camp theme song, and they knew the dance moves. This was our family's, you know, theme song going to the mission field. I've heard that. I've had people say, you know, like that, getting us up going in the morning for this whole season of life. My favorite, one of my favorites is a guy came up to me one day and he said, he was a young guy, and I was kind of surprised. He's like, man, Stephen Curtis Chapman, I can't, you know, it's so cool to meet you. And he's like, you know what your music means to me? There's like one word comes to mind when I hear your music, especially The Great Adventure. And I'm thinking, wow, this seems like it's going to be really powerful. And he says, pancakes, man, pancakes. And I'm like, okay, all right, tell me about that. And he's like, he said, dude, every Saturday morning, man, when I was 8 years old, if I heard The Great Adventure come on, that meant mama's in the kitchen making some pancakes. It was a good day. So I'm like, hey, I'm just here to be a blessing, however I can.
Well, you know, musics and smells; those two things tie up memories more than anything else. You can evoke a memory quick with either a song from your childhood or a smell from your childhood, and man, it'll resonate. And you know, one more quick anecdote. My daughter, when she was three, our family went to see you in concert. I believe you were in Birmingham. We went to see you in concert. She fell asleep during intermission because she was three. So I'm sitting there holding her, my wife's holding her, one of us. Anyway, she's sound asleep. You came back on stage. Whatever you were playing kicked on, and with her eyes still closed, she started dancing. And, you know, the audience can't see me because we're on radio, but she's literally starting to dance in my wife's arms with her eyes closed and then slowly woke up with her hands. You know, she was going at it. But anyway.
That's amazing. Just getting it even while she's kind of still snoozing.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you for letting me be a part of your family's life. What a cool thing. What a humbling privilege. I hear that story a lot, and I never want to, you know, forget to just stop and say what a gift that was and is and has been to be woven into so many families' stories and lives and journeys, you know, faith journey and all of that. So that's so cool. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And so let me ask you this. If I recall correctly, your dad was either a guitar teacher or a guitar maker, and you and your brother, I think, started playing early on. How'd you get into being a recording artist? I mean, where did this come from?
My dad was and is a great guitar player, singer, songwriter. When I was a little bitty guy, I remember him with his buddies. He played in a group there in Western Kentucky. They were pretty well known around Western Kentucky and surrounding states. And they would do concerts and they played every Saturday night at a place near the Land Between the Lakes, which is an area where I grew up, Kentucky Lake and Barkley Lake and all of that. So my earliest memories are music memories, my dad playing music with his buddies, because I was so intrigued by it. I love the sounds, bluegrass especially. That's the kind of music, folk and bluegrass and country music upright bass guitar. My dad played guitar. They had banjos and fiddles and, you know, all of that stuff. So those were the sounds that kind of, that I remember, you know, coming alive to when I was a little boy. And then watching my dad write songs, be such a great musician, watching him perform. I always, you know, just was enamored with that and fascinated with it. So he started a little music store when I was probably 5 or 6 years old called Chapman Music. Originally was in Mayfield, Kentucky, which is now everybody knows the name Mayfield because of the tornado a few years ago, couple of years ago, that devastated the whole town. And my dad's music store was there right outside of Paducah, Kentucky. Eventually, he moved it back to our hometown of Paducah, and it's still there. I'm happy to report my dad is 83 years old, and he still teaches guitar lessons five days a week. Pretty great. Just he's such a great man and great inspiration for me and so many others. He's taught so many people music, but more than that, his music store's kind of been a little, it's kind of been like a little counseling, inspiring center. I mean, he's led a lot of people to faith in Jesus. He's shared his, you know, faith with a lot of people. He's just cheered a lot of people on in their hard times and all of that. So it's been a really cool thing. I think in a way my dad had this amazing ministry, even though he never really called it that all these years. It was just his little music store and his guitar studio. But as a result of being around that as a kid, I started playing guitar when I was 6 years old. He taught me Folsom Prison Blues was the first song I learned on the guitar. And from there, you know, we started to sing together. He'd grown up in a faith environment, but he didn't have a father. His dad had left home when he was about 3 years old. Alcohol sadly destroyed his relationship with his family. Eventually, it destroyed his father's life. By the time my dad was 9, his father passed away. So he had grown up without a dad, and so music was his pursuit. But when I was about 7 years old, my mom and dad and my older brother all really committed their lives to a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that was really the beginning of a massive kind of seismic shift in my family. And we began to sing together. And my dad's pursuit of music in country, and he wanted to be on the Grand Ole Opry someday, but he laid that dream down because he didn't want to be gone on the weekends now. He really wanted to be there for his family. He wanted to be a dad who was present for his two sons, unlike his dad was for him and his brother. And so thankfully he did that. We were together in church and we were together singing and started singing in church. I came to faith personally when I was 8 years old at this same little church, Olivet Baptist Church there in Paducah. And so we started learning, you know, Bill Gaither songs and singing those in church together and around town. My brother and I started to be a little duo, the Chapman Brothers, that kind of got known around Paducah, and everybody wanted us to come sing, you know, at their whatever different gatherings or talent shows or whatnot. And I started writing songs in high school. And so I got to college. My dad told me to go get a real job because it's hard to feed a family playing a guitar. And because he had done that for a life. And he said, it's a lot. It's not as easy as you might think. And he said, so go get a real job. You got a smart brain. I didn't get an education. You got a chance to get an education. So I went and I was a pre-med major for one very long, painful, awful semester because I didn't belong in that. Saw the light.
Boy, was operating outside his gifts at that point.
Yes, absolutely. Big time. And somehow a little cassette tape, if you remember what those were, some of you will, that I had made of some songs I'd written, found its way into the hands. And this was God's plan and God's, you know, as only God could orchestrate, into the hands of none other than Bill Gaither himself, the guy who wrote the songs I grew up singing with my family. And got a phone call from Bill Gaither who said, hey, I think you've got a gift. I think these songs are pretty good start, and I'd love to mentor you and just encourage you in this gift. And even let's talk about publishing. Let me publish some of your songs if you're open to that. And I'm like,
and your first break was in songwriting, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it. So I started writing songs for other people, and I had songs recorded by Sandy Patty and Glenn Campbell and the Imperials and a lot of other people before I ever made my first record, which was 1987, as you referenced earlier, firsthand. 35 years ago. And that's been my journey. It's been an amazing story and incredible adventure.
Well, and it has maybe the great adventure, but
you could call it that.
Boomer, how are we doing on time, bud? What we got? About a minute and a half? All right. So let me ask you this. With about a minute and a half before we go to the first break, your dad's musical influence on your life and, of course, the Lord's influence on your life, has your dad ever performed on stage with you since you became a recording artist? Has he ever come on stage and you just picked and grinned together?
So my dad's dream was to be on the Grand Ole Opry, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
He laid that dream down so he could be a dad, so he could be with his family, so we could sing together growing up. So about 5 years ago, I made an album called, it was a bluegrass album, paying homage to the music I grew up loving so much. And I called my dad. He sang on the album with me and played guitar on it. It's amazing. It's my favorite record because it's got my dad, it's got my brother on it with me. And I called him and I said, Dad, I want you to come to Nashville. I'm going to release this album and we're going to do a big performance to kind of announce the releasing of it. So he came and at about, I think he was 80 years old. I said, introduced my dad and he walked out on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh.
And we sang together on the Opry with Ricky Skaggs and my brother and my dad and my son. So talking about a cool moment, man, I was, you know, pretty much a puddled the whole time because I was just crying and it was beautiful. It was such a cool, and that's just God, you know, that's God's word about, you know, if you delight yourself in him, he will give you the desires of your heart. Now that isn't a formula for, hey, God's gonna, you know, if I do good things, you know, and trust him, he's gonna give me all the good things I want. But that was just such a great moment.
What a great thing.
Seeing that come to fruition, that this dream that my dad had all these years later would come to fruition because he made a decision to honor God with his family and his life and his faith and his music.
Wow. All right. Well, tell you what, Stephen, we got to take our first break right now. Let's do that real quick. And folks, you're listening to an interview right now with singer-songwriter, Christian recording artist, Stephen Curtis Chapman, with a legacy that goes beyond most folks who've ever had a chance to sing and play in front of anyone. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. All right, we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right. Enjoying some time right now with Stephen Curtis Chapman, a singer-songwriter, Christian music recording artist. Been doing this since 1987. I guess, hey, Stephen, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, you've had what I would call an enduring career. I mean, not everybody, they come and go. I mean, in your industry, whether it be Christian or secular, you see them, they come on. Sometimes they even have a phrase called one-hit wonders. But you've been around, you've kind of endured, talk to us about that. How does that happen? And of course, I guess the first thing you can say is God, but nonetheless, talk to me about how you make a 30 some odd year career out of this.
Well, that is a really great question. And,
and if you figure it out, you'll tell me, right?
Yeah. If I knew the answer, I'd write the book and might sell, you know, at least a dozen copies, you know, to some people who would look and go, how does a hillbilly from Paducah, Kentucky, you know, ever end up, you know, on this kind of a journey? And I'm still more amazed than anybody and more just in awe of that and more grateful than anything, just because it is a crazy thing. You know, from the very beginning, when I did my first record, people would say, when they'd hear my music, and I got to back up, you know, the reason I started as a songwriter, I didn't even feel like I had a strong enough voice to even be an artist per se, because I grew up in a family of golden pipes. My dad was a great singer. My brother was the singer. I was always his backup guy. I was the guy in the shadows kind of playing along. And yet I was the back, you know, I would kind of sing background vocals for him. But when he went away to college, that's kind of, I had no voice in front. So that's when I kind of had to dig up, you know, kind of up from my toes what little voice I felt like I had. But it was really songwriting that gave me sort of my voice. That's where I found a sense of confidence enough to go, well, I think part of me, jokingly, but I think there was a part of it was a reality that I thought, well, if I sing a song they never heard before, then they don't have anything to compare it to. So they won't know if it's good or bad. You know, they don't know if I'm doing it right or not. So I think that's part of what fueled my songwriting from the beginning. But I started, you know, writing songs. And I think at the very beginning, even though I didn't feel like I had this powerful voice that would make people stop and go, wow, what is that? I would hear people say, man, when you sing, I feel like those songs, I feel like you're my friend. I feel like you somehow know me. You know what's going on. And I relate to that. And so thank you. I feel like I know you and feel like you know me, even though we never met. And all these years later, when people hear my music still, they will say, man, your music has journeyed with me on my journey, my life, my family. And I've got songs that mark when I got married. My wife and I, you know, got married to your song, I Will Be Here. I danced with my daughter, you know, to your song, Cinderella, at a wedding.
Oh, my gosh.
You've just been a part of our family. You've been a part, you know, of our, with your music. And that, I guess, is if I could say anything as far as what has allowed me to endure all this time is that people have connected in that way through different seasons of life. And somehow, by God's grace, my music stayed relevant enough with people. I've worked at it. Yeah, I try to learn all I can and stay a student, change things up when I need to, but not also try to be something I'm not, go put on skinny jeans and try to pretend that I'm still really cool and young and hip and all that stuff, but just kind of go, here's where I am. Here's what's going on in my life. And again, by God's grace, it seems like it's connected with people still.
Well, it has, and we're about down to a minute for our next break, but I got to tell you, just referencing back real quick, my daughter, who I told you was 3 years old and fell asleep at the concert that time, she just got married a few weeks ago, and I was almost mad at you when the song Cinderella came out because it tore me up back in the day, and I told him there were a couple of songs we were not allowed to play at her wedding, and one of them was that.
You just banned it.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. That one and some Butterfly Kisses song, it was not going to happen.
Denial is your happy place. I got you. I feel you. Just deny it even exists.
That's right. Boomer, what do we got, buddy? How are we doing on time? About time to roll it? All right, we'll do that. Listen, folks, we're going to take the hard break right now. Bottom of the hour, we got to do it. But let's come right back with Stephen Curtis Chapman. We're going to talk to him about what his family's been doing with an amazing ministry called Show Hope. I think it's going to warm your heart. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
Fallen hard upon the thirsty ground. I carved a way to where the wild and rushing river can be found. And like the rain, I have been carried here to where the river flows.
Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Saddle up your horses.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about we are down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville. We got from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And we are back right now with Stephen Curtis Chapman. Hey, Stephen, listen, I want to jump off of your actual singing career and talk about, I guess, the stewardship of some of God's callings on your life, one of which has been a ministry called Show Hope that you and your wife, Mary Beth, started some years back, 2009-ish, thereabouts?
Yes, sir. Well, probably officially right around 2000. Well, the story began with our own adoption journey, which starts probably, honestly, around late 1990s, around 1998. Our daughter, Emily, our oldest child, we have three biological children, Emily, Caleb, and Will Franklin. And Emily was about 11, took a trip with her mom to Haiti, came back having spent time with kids that didn't have a family, and it broke her heart.
Yeah.
She just said, Mom, Dad, we got to do something about this. we need to adopt some children. Well, we had three kids at this point, and those who know our story and have heard me tell it over and over again, probably if they've seen me in concert, about how we just said, that's a beautiful idea that you should do when you grow up and have your own house. Because there's no room, you know, we're done. We'd gotten rid of the high chairs and the car seats and all that stuff. And we weren't going back, but she said, well, I'm going to pray about this because I think God is telling me we should adopt, you know. So at 11
years old.
We should
adopt, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, like I said, that's good for you. But as, you know, as God loves to tell these stories, you know, in ways we never saw coming, it was actually our daughter that was very instrumental in just us beginning to pray about and consider, is this something God has for us? We adopted our daughter, Shohanna, then subsequently our daughter, Stevie Joy, and then our daughter, Maria. So we ended up adopting three girls at different times from China. And so in the process of that, we began to, right after we adopted Shoei, which was in March of 2000. So that's, almost 23 years ago now, 22 years ago. We had so many families immediately, Christian families, that saw us, you know, we were very obviously public and vocal about our story.
Sure.
Sharing it wherever we had a chance, because we just, it was such an amazing experience for us. And we wanted other people to, you know, hear about it, know about it. And we had our eyes open to the needs of millions of children around the world, not just in China, but right here in the U.S., 500,000 in the foster care system, probably 130,000 of those able to be adopted right now, right in our backyard, but all around the world, millions of kids growing up without a mom and dad, without a family. It just broke our hearts as we had our eyes open to it. And partner that with people coming to us, Christian families saying, gosh, we would love to adopt someday. We just can't afford it right now because it can be $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. That's just, there's no way we can afford that. But we know God's going to provide at some point because we know He's called us to it. So we're ready whenever that comes. Well, you hear that message and you just walk through an orphanage where you know of hundreds of little ones specifically, but you know they're all over the world waiting for mom and dad and a family. You're thinking, all you need is some financial help. Are you kidding me? Well, come on, let's get this done. So my wife, who is definitely the fireball of the two of us, said, we got to do this. I'm going to start helping these families. So she starts writing checks basically to help families that want to adopt. And I'm starting to see this long line of people forming, you know, to go and, hey, this is a great opportunity, but my wife's writing checks faster than I'm writing songs, basically. So we got to do something here. Yeah. So that's how we started Show Hope. Honestly, we started it just to help families. The mission is to engage the church, because we believe this is James 1:27, where God says very clearly to us, His followers, the church, that his definition of true religion is to care for orphans and widows in their distress. And so we see this as a great invitation, not God, you know, looking over his glasses, checking his clipboard, you know, with a scowl on his face saying, do this or you're in big trouble. But God saying, hey, I want you to experience me. This is how you're going to experience really what it means to be a follower of Jesus, to be a God follower. It's going to be when you do the things that I'm passionate about and I want to take care of and care for these children, and I'm going to invite you into it. So all from a trip to Haiti. So we started helping families, and now after 20 years, give or take, it's almost been 20 years officially since we started Show Hope. We have been able to help almost, over 8,000 families now adopt kids from 63 countries by supporting them financially, also with just all kinds of encouragement, inspiration. We also now do some real specific work supporting families who bring children home with some very intense, complex needs emotionally, with abandonment, with, you know, when there's early childhood trauma, being in an institution. In an orphanage, they bring home some invisible baggage with them. And so we want to support that. So we do some great work in supporting families. Also medically, we do some great work to support families who have ongoing medical costs for children that they've adopted. And then we've got a student program that allows students to learn about the need of children in the world and just kind of inspire them, because this whole thing started in the heart of a student.
So. I got to tell you too, and that what a blessing that is, by the way, because adoption is a huge, if we're going to be pro-life as people, it's got to be pro-life even past the womb. And what you're doing there is pro-life if you get down to it. But let me tell you too, my weird eclectic resume, having spent years in full-time ministry, but then I went into the practice of law. I'm an attorney. And I spent a number of years in our state legislature in Alabama. I still to this day tell folks that one of the coolest things I ever got a chance to do was to recognize that my friends, the May family, Nathan May sitting right here in the studio, Boomer, had adopted his sister Karina from Ukraine. And I did not realize that until then that Alabama had archaic laws on the books that made it much harder. You had to go through an entire readoption process, they called it, which was a second level expense and all the hoops to jump through. And so as an attorney and a legislator, I personally wrote the law that we got passed with a complete bipartisan, 100% unanimous vote, House and Senate in Alabama, changed the law in Alabama to make it easier for foreign adoptions to occur. And we named it after Nate's sister. So it's called Karina's Law in Alabama.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Phil. Of all the great things that you've done, brother, that's one that's going to, the eternal significance of that, as you know, I mean, it's going to be amazing and is and will continue to be. So thank you for that.
Well, it's a blessing. We got about 4 minutes left, though, so talk to me about your family. The family's all involved. Show Hope is a family ministry as much as anything. It's not just you and your wife. I know your kids have of course, your daughter's the one who convinced you that adoption was what needed to happen anyway. And then as a part of it, and I know it's not there, it's not as active as it used to be, but you also had a house actually in China that was a very significant brick-and-mortar structure that was a part of the ministry too. We got about 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, Maria's Big House of Hope. So, yes, we have, as I mentioned, 6 kids, Emily, Caleb, Will, Franklin. Caleb and Will are guys that followed in Dad's footsteps. They're amazing musicians, have a band called Colony House. And they are touring. They're getting ready to release their 4th album, and they helped me produce this new album of mine. In fact, so they thankfully I got them to come work with me. They toured with me for about 5 years in my band, and just are really remarkable musicians. Caleb's an incredible songwriter and creator of all kinds of things, videos and songs and music and all of that. So real blessing to have them come back and work with me on my new music. Writing and producing some of it with me. And then, of course, Emily was at the helm of Show Hope up until about 6 months ago. She was our executive director for a period of 2 or 3 years and did an amazing job. But she came to us and said, you know what, my 3 little girls, our 3 granddaughters that are Emily's girls, are 10, 8, and 6. And she said, I just realized they're growing up so fast, and I want to be a mama and not, I'm afraid I'm going to blink my eyes and I'm going to do great work for Show Hope, which she was crushing it. But she said, I need to be mom right now.
Hard to argue with that.
So we were like, absolutely. But we have a staff of about 25 with Show Hope. Our daughter-in-law, actually my son, Caleb's wife, Julia, has been a part of the work of Show Hope for about 15 years now. And she's been one of our longest standing great employees in the finance department. So based here in Franklin. And then Shoey now is our Shohanna, the one that we adopted 23 almost years ago, is getting her degree in social work, her master's in social work at the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. That's why we love Alabama right now. And I know those are fighting words with you, Phil. I understand.
As an Auburn fan, I'm going to let that roll.
But she is spending a lot of her time in Birmingham, actually, at the Children's Hospital there, where she's working right now in a fellowship and part of her traineeship for her master's. And then Stevie Joy, her little sister, is a cheerleader for University of Alabama. She just cheered that game. They played a game this last Saturday.
It was nothing.
And really cool. Nate and I were just talking about this. She just got chosen as a member of the USA team to go represent the United States in the World Cheerleading Co-Ed Cheerleading Competition. this coming spring, which
about
is
that?
About as you know, top shelf as you can get in the world of cheerleading that she has entered into. So she's an incredible bright light. And then our youngest Maria is been with Jesus for almost, well, 13 years now.
Yeah.
It'll be 14 in May. She passed away a few days after her fifth birthday. And a lot of people know our story with that. And that's been a big part of our journey as well, and the grief and the just the tragedy of that. But God has been faithful and carried us as a family and continues to. And that building in China that you mentioned that still stands, we unfortunately in the last few years, as far as our work with Show Hope, particularly related to it, had to exit China. It's just things have changed so much there with our relationship. I was reading about China this morning. Things are intensifying there.
They really are.
And so we had to exit about 2019 after 10 years, but we were able to see help come to thousands of children that otherwise wouldn't have survived, many of them that were dying when they came into the care center that we got to care for. We know of almost 1,000 who were adopted into families around the U.S. We get to see them and meet them on an ongoing basis. So we know it was a work that God was in and honored our daughter and really still does. I mean, that work will go on for eternity. We just don't get to have the hands-on work that we did for 10 years there in China. But yeah, great work happening with Show Hope and amazing things going on with our family. We're just very grateful.
Well, I love the fact, and we're about to head to a break right now, but I love the fact that you've got a career. God has blessed you in the midst of it, and that you have used that as an opportunity then to do more for the kingdom, but your whole family's involved with it. That's just very cool. All right, I'll tell you what, Boomer, let's take it to the break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back, wrap up our time with Stephen Curtis Chapman. Are you playing that song, Boomer? Are you really?
Man. Get the tissue.
Oh, my gosh. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
The weight of the world on my shoulders. It's been a long day and there's still work to do. She's pulling at me saying, Dad, I need you. There's a ball.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Wrapping up some time here with Christian recording artist, singer-songwriter Stephen Curtis Chapman. Hey, Stephen, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a blessing to have you on here. You've been a part of my family's life for so many years, and just a joy to be able to share some time and hear your story. So thank you for that.
You're welcome, Phil. Thank you, buddy.
Well, listen, you ain't sitting still. That's not about to be a pun, but you ain't sitting still because you've got a new album out. I mean, you're still recording. Everything's still fresh. I mean, apparently you've still got a few songs left in you, but you just came out with a new album here in the last few months, and it's called Still. By the way, the cover song, the title song is already on my playlist, but talk to us about the new album. You got a tour coming up. I know you're playing in Montgomery, Alabama on March 30th.
That's right. Yes,
so,
sir.
So give us a scoop.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I honestly, I wasn't sure. Maybe a year or 2 years ago, if you'd asked me, I probably would have said, I'm not sure if I'll make another album again. I know I'll continue to, you know, it's hard to imagine me ever coming to a point where I, you know, put down the pen, hang up the guitar and say, yeah, I probably won't write any more songs. But interestingly enough, there are artists that I have heard about and read even recently about Billy Joel, who came to a point in his career where he said, I'm not going to write any more new music. I'm done. You know, the process of that, the intensity of that, that was something I did when I was young and I had all these things I wanted to say. And I think honestly, knowing the journey that you go through when you write new songs, when you have a career that you've been blessed with, like I have of, you know, 35 years of music, it's inevitable that people are going to, you're going to play a new song. And they're going to say, you know, that's great, but gosh, there's never going to be another song like fill in the blank, Great Adventure, Cinderella, I Will Be Here, Dive, you know, and there's never, man, your best album of all the albums is, you know, Signs of Life or More to This Life. I mean, they're going to pinpoint one and it's a great compliment, but it's also really hard on one level, because, you know, the insecure artist in you says, well, maybe they don't really care to hear any more new songs. Maybe, you know, and I write them for myself, but I also write these songs to have a conversation with people to say, man, here's what's happening in my life right now. And here's what God's shown me, or here's where I've blown it, or here's where I feel like maybe I got a little wisdom on this, something I learned, maybe the hard way, maybe on the mountaintop or the valley. And when you feel like maybe people are going to go, you know, nah, thank you, but just go ahead and play me the old songs.
Play,
you know,
the old stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You got like, okay. So, I mean, this is a lot of, it's kind of crazy. The hoops that you have to emotionally, mentally, you know, psychologically jump through to even get to a place spiritually, even just to go, do I need to write these songs and invest the time and energy? Cause I really want to, but does anybody really care or listening? Finally, about a year ago, I just pushed all those voices out of my head and said, you know what? Global pandemic, loss of friends and family members, and loss of normalcy, and loss of, you know, security. Yeah. I mean, my job went away for a while. There was no touring. Nobody ever knew if we ever would tour again. All those things that we all have gone through these last few years. There were a lot of songs started to kind of stir up in me. And out of that, I just sat down and started to write these songs and said, you know what? I think I've got some things that God's given me to say, some conversations that I would love to have with people. And I'm not going to worry as much about how many, or are they going to, you know, do they care? Do they want to hear the old songs? I feel like I need to do this and share this music. And as I did, I felt like sort of the wind came in my sails, and I started writing a lot of music. And this album and this whole theme of Still kind of came to the surface, which I think not only for me, I wanted to say, I still want to sing these songs. I still have things to say, because God's word never stops working on us and through us and in our world, and our world's never needed it more. So I still want to sing about it, but also, you know, to be able to say, God is still faithful. God is still good. That's what sustained us and our family. And that's the reason why I still want to make music about it. So,
well, brother, I've heard parts of it already, and you still got it, man. God's gift is still actively apparent in your life. And so thank you for that. And that being said, tour starts in March. I know that within the first month, you're already playing in Alabama and Montgomery. Like I said a moment ago, we're glad of that. But in the meantime, just know this: you've touched a lot of lives in a lot of different ways, not just in music. And I think the kingdom is broader because of it. But Stephen Curtis Chapman, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an honor to have you on.
Phil, thank you, brother. Bless you, my friend.
All right, thanks. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, the local, the state, the national, we got all the issues. Solid conservative and just plain right. Well, hour number three, inexplicably. But, you know, when you see things happen like the fact that we just had that interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman, you just kind of got to pinch yourself and literally just know that you're in a place where things are happening that are kind of bigger than you. You know what I'm saying? All said and done, that was just cool. Hey, Boomer, I'm going to tell you right now, in front of God and all the peoples that are listening right now, first of all, thank you, brother, for helping set that up, because I know you had a longstanding friendship with he and his family, and you're the one that made that happen. But then also, great job editing and making it all fit.
Oh, thanks. It all fit. It all went well, and the Chapman family is just an amazing family, and I was happy and blessed to be able to get a hold of them and get them on the show.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a good life moment for me, because I'm gonna tell you right now, I was not kidding when I said that when my kids were little. The song "The Great Adventure," for those of y'all that are out there that know it, starts off with him yelling, "Saddle up your horse." Well, my kids, that's what they called it. They called the song "Saddle Up Your Horses." And so I have no idea how many, you know, cassettes and CDs of that song got played in the Williams house back in the day.
So many, sure. Because I know that it played constantly at our house as well.
Oh, I mean, and of course, the kind of conversation that you can only have in the 90s, Daddy, play "Saddle Up Your Horses." I'm sorry, honey. We left the CD's in your mommy's minivan. That's
the CD's not here.
It's in mommy's minivan. The green Dodge Caravan. Yeah. Hey, just had a text in from Chris from Gadsden. He said they were hoping that Cinderella, the song Cinderella, was going to play when I danced with my daughter at her wedding. And I said, this Ranger Man would have been a hot mess if that had happened.
Well, but I just got a text from my father-in-law, and yeah. He's like, man, thanks for playing that song. It was super special. I mean, it was. That's the song Stephen was able to play at our wedding, and it was incredible. It was for the father-daughter dance, so it was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'd have been a puddle. Your father-in-law must be more of a man than me, because I would not have made it through. That song is designed to rip a dad's heart out, is just to be honest.
I mean, it rips my heart out, and I've only been a dad for a little over 5.5 years now.
Ugh.
So it's like, oh man.
Ugh. John from Huntsville just texted in and said, great interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman. He said, also, I love how he helps people who are less fortunate, especially those in Haiti. That country's really in bad shape right now. Yeah, John, you're right, and thank you, sir. Appreciate you chiming in on that. Mm. Allie from Athens texted in and just said, I shouldn't even bother with a third dipper now. We just just let people call in. By the way, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Anybody want to call in, you're welcome to it. 833-68-RIGHT. That's 833-687-4448. You are welcome to call in or text in on the same number, 833-687-4448. And give me your thoughts on that interview or anything else we've talked about so far today. I will be jumping into the third dipper in a minute, but I will take calls on that one throughout. So glad of it. Yeah, what?
Well, I just got a text from my father-in-law. He said, it made me laugh. He goes, the best part was no one was looking at the old man crying. It was they were all watching Stephen Curtis.
Yeah, he's probably right. I was there, so I can attest. I was like, oh, they're dancing. I asked Stephen Curtis Chapman. So, yeah, that's – but anyway, good stuff, man. And you know, the ministry he's got, Show Hope.
Yes.
If folks didn't really gather what that means, it's literally a ministry – that helps people through the adoption processes. You know, the costs, the administrative minutia. It gives them the advice, the counseling, the support network, the resources, and sometimes even the finances, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and it's still up and running. Like that.
Oh,
is
yeah,
still, yeah, still going and stuff. So.
And they've got a website, I guess, Show Hope.
Yes, I believe it's showhope.com. Let me confirm.
Or .org. Mm-hmm. I bet it's .org. So yeah, check that. Let's make sure we say that on the air. I should have said it during the interview, but we'll say it now if we have to. What you got?
Showhope.org.
Showhope.org. All right. But it's named because his daughter's name is Shoei, right? They call her
Shohanna. And they call her Shoei.
Yeah, she's adopted from China.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Shohanna, Shoei for short?
Shoei for short.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, good deal. All right. Well, showhope.org is their ministry. Check it out. And by the way, that's a cool thing. When I love the idea of someone being in a place where they can take what they've had given to them and then make something of it in other ways. In other words, he's being a steward, I guess, of he's got resources. What I'm trying to say is he's been extremely successful. I don't know his financial wherewithal, but I imagine it's good. And he chose to go ahead and turn around and just chunk some of that into this opportunity to help other people. Mm. Very cool. Paul from Athens just texted in, very inspirational, love listening to his story. Thank you, Paul, appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, listen, there's a lot going on in the world right now, but we got to pause once in a while, got to pause. and recognize that there are things happening right now that are worth paying attention to, that are bigger than ourselves, and that mean something more than politics. And I don't want this show to ever become just a freaking gripe session. I mean, we could do that all day long. How many radio shows out there are just gripe sessions? And do I have issues, complaints to things to point out that I believe are in error? Sure. But we got to make sure we balance that with the fact that there are things happening in this world that are worth being thankful for and paying attention to and maybe even jumping on board and being a part of. Chris from Gadsden just texted in when I said if they'd played that song Cinderella at my daughter's wedding that I would have been a hot mess. He said I'd have collapsed in the puddle right there with you. So, yep. Appreciate you, man. He knows what it means to marry off a daughter. I know who I'm talking to with that text. Anyway, all right, Boomer, who's the next one? Who are we going to interview next?
Well, there's a few up my sleeve, and then I know you got a lot up your sleeve.
I'm telling you, my goal is that, like, you know, once a month-ish, we've got somebody national on here, somebody that is like, wait, he's got who on the show? So I love that.
It's going to be fun. Keeping everybody on their toes.
You got to.
Yeah.
Hey, that'll be podcasted tonight.
Yes, everything will be podcasted and put out on our website and on the podcast form probably within 30 minutes after the show.
Okay. Yeah, you want to hear it again or send it to somebody, you can do that. I know one of the stations we're on already asked for a copy of it too, Boomer. You're going to take care of that.
Yeah.
Because they might send it to some of their other station affiliates and have it played in other places.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. They should pay us for it. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me. Can you make that a pay for play situation there? Well, listen. Before I get to the break, let me just say all this stuff. Everything that we do on this show is at rightsideradio.org. If you're not a podcaster, you don't already have your own podcast format that you use, like Podbean or Google or iTunes or whatever. You can go to rightsideradio.org. The links are on there to every episode we've had. You can go ahead and just download them, send them to somebody, get signed up. It's worth it.
And just so people know, on the website, and we'll change this a little bit, but it's at the very bottom of the main page.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you can scroll all the way down on the main page, and that's where the podcasts are. But we'll put a label on there soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, one more thing I got to say before we go to the break. So if you're not familiar, Right Side Radio is actually a 501c3 entity. We are a separate standalone organization. We don't work for the radio stations we're on. If you want to be a part of what Right Side Radio is doing, you just contact us and we'll talk to you about that. If you want to advertise on Right Side Radio, we also sell our own advertising. So we would love for you to get, we'll put Courtney, who does our sales, in touch with you right away. You believe in what we're standing for? Well, that must mean your business stands for the same thing. We'd love to have you advertise as a part of Right Side Radio's advertising team, and we would have Courtney get in touch with you ASAP and make sure that's done. All right, John from Huntsville says we need to get Chuck Norris on the show. I like that idea. I like that idea a lot.
Chuck Norris.
Yeah. And then JT from Lacey Springs says we just need to do an interview with Jeff from Indiana. Mike in Madison wants to know, what song was that last bump music that I played? Was it the one you talking about? The one, I guess, on what was the last outgoing bump? Oh, that was probably our own, wasn't it?
That was our own.
Yeah,
that was our own.
That was our own bump music, which comes from the Black Keys, I believe. And I got it, or is it Kaleo? It's a Kaleo song, I think.
Kaleo.
Yeah, what's the name of it? Do you recall?
Oh boy, give me a second.
We'll find it. All right, it's a song. It's a song by a band called Kaleo, K-A-L-E-O, that we use. It's our bump. It's our main bump. Mike, that's the one you're looking at. Look up a band called Kaleo. It's one of their greatest hits. I'll think of the name in a minute. Brian from Huntsville says he wishes Charlie Daniels is still alive for me to interview. But I did, by the way, Brian. I had my moment. On Twitter, quick anecdote, one morning back when I first started on Twitter, this is like 2012, I was following Charlie Daniels, who was a prolific tweeter, if you will, but Charlie Daniels had literally just, I just looked at my Twitter feed on my phone, he had just tweeted something out about making the most of the day that we have, or something like that. And it was like 2 seconds, and apparently I was the very first one. I responded back, and I said, blessings on your day, sir. And he tweeted right back at me. He said, and to you and yours, my good friend, or something like that. And I was like, I'm done. Charlie Daniels just tweeted at me. My day is complete. I can go ahead and go back to bed. That was my story.
That's great. No Good, was that the name of the song from Kaleo?
Is that right? I believe it is. Yes. I think it is. I think so. All right, Boomer, take us to a break. We'll do that right now. We're going to come back. We'll take calls, 833-687-4448. You want to talk, we'll talk. But we'll also jump into the third dipper of the day, off the rails. Rail strike? What the heck? What is going on there? We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Man, the text line is up to hundreds of subscribers. And literally, hey, Mike from Madison, welcome to the text line. We're glad you're on there. Jeff from Indiana says, well, Phil, you can do an interview with me anytime. And since he's already paid my fee having a Right Side Radio t-shirt, he says, just being able to be in the presence of two great men like you and Boomer is an honor. Anyway, but he did say he loved the interview. And anyway, I appreciate you, Jeff. Thanks, brother. Be safe on the road, man. We also got a new one. This calls himself the Parts Guy from Albertville. So, Parts Guy, we're glad you're in the mix. Scott from Russellville texted in. And as for the idea of who to interview next, he's got three ideas. I love all of them. James Woods, John Rich, and Rob Schneider. And I will just go ahead and say there's one name on that list we're already working on. I will not tell you which one. But, yeah, James Woods, John Rich, Rob Schneider, those will be awesome interviews. By the way, he spells awesome, A-U-S-O-M-E. I'm assuming he's an Auburn fan or he just misspelled it. I don't know which. But anyway, I like the A-U version, all right, of awesome. JT from Lacey Springs, he's giving you a technical thing. You might want to check it out there, Boomer. Maybe you're having something going on with one of the stations. Anyway, hey, listen, we're going to jump into the next part of the Triple Dipper to carry us through the end of today's show. Off the rails. And by the way, call in about if you want to. I will take a moment away from what I'm working on right now with Off the Rails, and we'll talk about anything else we've talked about on the show. I'll just leave it open line Thursday, apparently. 833-687-4448. But yeah, Off the Rails. So I don't know if you remember this, but about 4 to 6 weeks ago, which would put it just, you know, a mere 3 weeks or so before the midterm elections, President Biden actually held a Rose Garden press conference to announce that his administration had successfully negotiated and averted a major rail strike. Now, folks, I'm going to break it down for you. You're going to hear some of these stats more than once because of the various stories that I've got, but just know this. We're not talking about one rail line. We're talking about all rail lines. 40% of all of America's freight uses rail. 40%. Can you imagine what it would do to the economy if 40% of all of our supply chain just stopped? And that's where we're at. The deadline was December 9th, but apparently the Biden administration had worked it all out. Everything was good. They got it done just in time for the elections, except they didn't. For whatever reason, it appears they got out a little ahead of their skis. You know, people gave Bush grief when he did a speech and was standing in front of a banner that somebody else put up that said mission accomplished. Well, I got news. Biden just had his mission accomplished moment, and he's not getting called out about it by the press. Oh, no. No, no. He's still the hero because he turned around and he sent it straight to Congress to have to work on. But why would he do that? I thought he and his Department of Labor Secretary and Secretary of Transportation, Secretary, and all of them, or Department of Transportation, I thought they had all gotten it worked out. No, they had not gotten it worked out. The deal that they thought they had worked out had only been approved by upper-level union bosses. It had not been voted on by the rank and file. So what happened there was, in order to save face right before the elections and to make the world think that all was well, the Biden administration chose to call something done that was nowhere near done. And what's happened now is 4 out of the 12, I believe it is, major rail unions. This controls, by the way, this controls transit. This controls maintenance. This controls freight lines. This controls everything about rail. These are all of the rail unions. Not even the even some of the metro lines, like in city Amtrak, all of it. Bam. And so what's happened is 4 of the major unions rank and file have voted against the plan that was agreed on. We're going to talk about that in a minute, what that means. But then at the same time, the other unions, the ones who had voted for it, they're now back there saying, and you know what, we'll go ahead and stand in solidarity with those who chose to go on strike if they do. So in other words, everybody's going on strike. So now Biden, who didn't have it done, kicks it off and gives it back to Congress and says, do something. I'm sorry, Mr. President, I thought you were doing something. Well, listen, that's where we're at. That is where we're at. Speaking of jobs, before I go to the break, let me just tell you, ZLA Solutions, they've been with us since this show began. From the very beginning, ZLA Solutions, which is doing an epically good job at getting jobs and people lined up, they've been a supporter of this show. And they are literally out there making it happen. If you're looking for a job, go to their website, ZLAUSA.com. But if you're an employer and you're looking to fill out the ranks of your workforce, you need more people, onesies and twosies, very niche or high-skilled, or just need to fill out an entire shift to run the line at your factory, they can do that. They can handle all of that. The recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing if necessary, every bit of it. Blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. Please do check them out. And tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back with Off the Rails. We are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid, conservative, and just plain right. I'm talking about this show goes way down south of Birmingham, way up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. I got it right that time, Boomer. I didn't get distracted by a phone ringing in the background.
No distractions that time.
Early in the show, I'm trying to talk, turn off my phone, losing my notes. It was awful. It was a moment. I got a note, a couple more texts just for fun here. Rita from Scottsboro, I didn't see it until just now. It got buried under some other texts, but Rita from Scottsboro, with regards to the Stephen Curtis Chapman interview about him playing on the stage at the Grand Ole Opry with his dad and his brother, she says, was I the only one with tears streaming down my face picturing him and his dad, his brother, and everyone at the Grand Ole Opry? She goes, geez, I'm a mess. And then she says, LOL. But anyway, Rita, I get it. Well, I mean, what a cool thing that he said that if you missed that part of the interview, his dad was an amazing guitarist, played in a band, but decided that the only way for him to truly be home and raise his kids was to put aside his own dream of ever playing at the Grand Ole Opry. So he opened up a guitar store, and became, you know, more of a figure in his kids' everyday life. Mm. Well, that's what caused Stephen Curtis Chapman then to have the opportunity to learn to play with his dad, and to have a father figure like that in his life, who then went on to have an amazing career. Who then, by the way, got a chance to play at the Grand Ole Opry and had his dad come play on stage with him.
So cool.
That's beyond cool.
Yes. That's, absolutely.
There's a movie moment in that somewhere. I'm just saying.
There is.
Yep. Rita, you're not the only one that thought that one was cool.
There's a couple other good texts as well.
Yeah, there are. There's quite a few. John from Huntsville.
I think you're about to do this one.
He goes, Phil, I wonder if there's a show called Left Side Radio, always fake, always liberal, and just plain wrong. Well, you know what? If there is, I ain't listening to it, John, just so you know. All right, we're in number three of the Triple Dipper, Off the Rails. Let me just jump into this. So here's the bottom line. I kind of laid the foundation for it a while ago, but President Biden had already announced this was a done deal. It's done. Well, Politico, and by the way, everybody's talking about this, but there, some of them, like, I got a CNN story here that is so trying to moderate this for the Biden administration. Like, well, you know, it was important that he take these, that kind of crap. I've got another one from New York Magazine that is literally the most apologetic thing I've ever seen for unions, but I'm going to read through it. So the first article I got here from Politico, headline dated today, yesterday, rail contract faces uncertain Senate future as freight shutdown looms. So it says that a House bill to head off a nationwide rail strike faces an uncertain future in the Senate just days before the threatened work stoppage is likely to begin affecting the economy. The bill, which still needs a vote in the Senate, would impose a labor contract opposed by tens of thousands of unionized workers. Okay, picture what I just said. Congress acting to tell the private sector what they will do. I get it. It's far bigger than just, is Apple making the best computer? All right. This is. When you're talking about shutting down 40% of the economy, I guess I get it, but this is a very unusual step for Congress to exercise powers that was granted to it. And I'm trying to think how long ago, but there is actually a law on the books that allows for this type of intervention to take place. Well, some Democrats are already trying to push to get it resolved this week. They want it over with. You know why they want it over with? They don't want it dragged out in the press. It makes them look bad, and their union buddies are calling them left and right going, what are you doing? Because this is causing a wedge right now. This is when they are getting pitted against their usual constituents. So here's the thing. 40% of the entire supply chain, 40% of all U.S. freight goes by rail. 40%. Whether some or all of that supply chain for that particular item goes by rail. 40% of the nation's economy supply chain is connected to rail. There are estimates that say if this strike were to take place, the economy would take a $2 billion per day hit. $2 billion in economic loss per day to the economy. That's how big it is. You know what the only sticking point was on this? Not that they weren't getting enough pay. Not that they weren't getting, I mean, they were getting like a 23% pay bonus, I think it was, an 11, or pay increase, a one-time bonus of $11,000, new scheduling arrangements. The one sticking point was they want paid sick leave. That was it. The whole thing came down to paid sick leave. But on Wednesday evening, it says, Republicans have widely divergent opinions about the bill. So what are they going to do? Boomer, I tell you what, let's do some audio clips here. I want to go ahead and get clip one ready, if you don't mind, please. We got an audio clip here of Steve Moore that I'm going to play in just 1 second. CNN has an article dated yesterday, all of it's fresh. Says there's no illusions inside the White House that the decision to call on Congress to impose a negotiated labor agreement on railroad workers would be universally well received. That it was a pained explanation given by Biden for the decision to implicitly have to buck his close political allies. Keep in mind, when Biden got elected, he named himself as the most pro-union president ever. Well, why do you think they feel so emboldened for negotiations? Because they know they're operating in an environment where the U.S. Department of Labor under the Biden administration will probably be there for them in most ways. However, they couldn't quite get past this one piece. Pelosi, like, literally said she was going to have that bill up in the House right away, and they did, and it passed. So the House has already passed a bill, which is now, as of just a few minutes ago, up on the screen here in the studio, is indicating that they have the votes in the Senate. They think they'll pass it. During his announcement, Biden spoke to cabinet officials who had run point of the talks, saying he had spoken to his cabinet officials, Labor Secretary Marty Walsh, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. The agencies all made up the key players in the negotiations. The message about where things had stood was clear. It says that Biden said that there's no path to resolve the dispute at the bargaining table and have recommended that we seek congressional action. Well, see, that the most aggravating. I tell you what, let's just do that. Play Boomer clip one. Steve Moore, former financial advisor to President Trump, was on the Hannity show. I saw his comments last night, and it was so well said. I thought I got to find that clip. I had to go search this clip out and play it. So you got clip one, Boomer, Steve Moore. Go ahead and play it.
In history.
Let me ask, Steve, if you look at the deal that's on the table for the rail workers, they're going to get a 24% pay increase. And on average, most workers will get about an $11,000 bonus. That doesn't sound like a horrible deal to me.
Well, this is a fiasco. I mean, this is a total fiasco, yeah. An egg on the face of this White House. This has been—we've known about this issue for 6 months, that this strike might occur. And we can't have our rail workers going on strike. It would cause, you know, all sorts of problems for the American economy. And yet, remember, 2 or 3 weeks before the election—I don't know if you remember this, Sean— the president had a press conference in the Rose Garden at the White House declaring victory on this. I've solved the problem. Mission accomplished. He took a victory lap. Of course, it was only to punt the thing past the election. Then we get past the election. He can't solve the problem, and now he's punting it to Congress. Sean, that's not presidential leadership. That's not what a president does.
Okay.
The reason these workers are so angry, frankly, is when you've got you've had 15% inflation since Biden came into office. So workers are agitated because their paychecks are shrinking, Sean.
There you go. He said it so well. They're first of all, they're negotiating against inflation. That's hard, because they're at 40-year high inflation. They're negotiating for things that they say they want, and everybody knows we have to keep them to some degree, solve it because, or moving forward, because the economy is resting upon rail in many ways. But at the same time, they are getting a lot out of this. They are. Now, they're getting immediate 14% pay raises with back pay several years. 14%. And they're getting 24% over the course of 5 years. They're also getting $11,000 initial bonuses, and everybody gets at least a $1,000 cash bonus every year thereafter. It's a huge contract. In fact, the article I've got here from CNN says it's the biggest pay increase won by the unions in more than 50 years. And it all came down to sick leave. Well, why is that so important? What I mean, do you not get paid holidays? Do you not get PTO? Do you not get the opportunity to call in? Well, there are some issues there. And so I'm going to try and explain that in a minute, because I've got one piece that I read from, it's from New York Magazine. It's a very liberal point, but it talks about why they use what's called precision scheduled railroading. And basically what they're saying is, in order to run a good business and keep the freight running on time, it's hard for them to have sick leave. Anyway, we'll talk about it. I got a caller. I'll take a caller real quick. Is that Jeff from Indiana? Jeff Rowe from Indiana. How you doing, man?
Doing great, Phil. I love the interview. You guys are great.
Thank you, buddy.
That really was touching.
Thank you, bud. Appreciate it. Where are you at right now? You on the road?
Yeah, I'm about middle of Tennessee here. I haven't made it to Nashville yet, so I'm not stopped.
Well, so like I always say now, you're somewhere between Bucky's and Nashville.
Yeah, exactly. Right at about the halfway point, I guess you'd say.
Well, good. What's on your mind, man?
Hey, you know, everybody's talking about these railroad guys and everything. They're getting all the kudos and stuff. Hey, maybe I want to go on strike. You know, what do you think's going to happen if truckers go on strike? Because I don't think them railroads run to every house in the country, you know?
I'm pretty sure, too, that the 40% that runs on rail, it's mostly like 60% that runs on the roads. Am I right?
I'd say even more than that, because the rail is just going to stop at a terminal, and then from that terminal, you're going to take it on a truck.
That's true. That's true. All right.
Yes.
So, well,
I'm working 60, 70 hours a week, man. I need some time off, too, and a little more pay.
Well, let me ask you. You and I talked about this once on the air before, back when Biden said he had it worked out, and he didn't. What's going to happen if the rail was to go on strike? Can the freight haulers on the road pick it up? Can they pick up the slack?
Well, no, because I mean, heck, we're 60,000 truck drivers short right now, and you know, there's no. I mean, our my company right now, we've got people sharing trucks right now because there's not enough trucks even out there on the market.
Oh, wow.
Because we can't get them, they can't build them fast enough.
Well, and I also saw, too, your industry is facing some new things in California where you're going to have battery-powered trucks and clean energy trucks and new trucks.
Well, California could just fall off into the ocean, I think, if it wants to. It wouldn't hurt my feelings a bit.
Well, there's some good folks out there. That's our second biggest podcast audience is still in California, so I'm hoping that they're going to breathe some sense into their politics eventually.
Well, those people just have to flee like everybody else from the blue states are, I guess, and get out of there while it's getting good.
Well, that's true. Alabama welcomes you. We got a lot of California refugees here in Alabama. We'll take you. But
we only want the sane ones, though. I mean, you know, we don't want them to bring that blue politics. I don't look for Nancy to move over. I don't want Nancy in my neighborhood.
No, Nancy's too busy trying to figure out how people get into her house at night right now. She's going to stay where she is for the moment.
I bet Paul knows.
I'm betting he does, too. Hey, Jeff, we got to run to a break, brother. You be safe on the road. Have a good night, and we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
You have a good one, Phil.
All right, we'll see you. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, buddy. We'll come right back. I'm barely scratching the surface of this dipper. I mean, I don't know how. Do you see how much stuff I've got, Boomer? I've got like a whole...
Oh, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
I know. You're barely scraping it.
Barely. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're in number 3 of the Triple Dipper, off the rails. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Our listeners crack me up. We got two, Mike from Huntsville and Jeremy from Huntsville, both texted in the same thing. They said, where'd it go? It says basically that, you know, John a while ago said, we need to find out there's a left side radio. He said, tell John there is a left side radio. It's called NPR. That's just good. And then Paul from Athens is giving me grief about whether I'm going to finish up my triple dip. I'm going to finish it, man. I'm going to finish it. But he says, tomorrow you can start off with Off the Rails as the number one dipper, but then you got to retitle it Back on Track. That's just good. By the way, Jeremy from Huntsville also had a great thing there. I missed it earlier. Talking about my monologue was on lying and the reasons why and why not and don't, and the fact that the Biden administration just continually contradicts truth. Let's put it that way. But he's just talking about the fact that it's like a personal thing with him, and I won't go into the whole text he said, but he says he knows he's fortified and even lost a few relationships because of being honest, but he's also stronger and happier because of it. And so I get it, man. I get it. Hey, back on this, the situation off the rails. So article here from AP, headline, House votes to avert the rail strike. So the House did vote. The news put up just a little while ago while we were here in studio, today's show, says the Senate believes it has the votes to pass the bill that will enforce the agreement as it stands now. In other words, the rail workers are not going to get their final demands for additional sick leave, that whatever had been approved by their leadership at some point is now going to be forced to be in place, period. Business groups, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the American Farm Bureau, and others have warned that halting the rail services in a strike would cost $2 billion a day as a hit to the economy. And now they are all praising the House for voting to block the strike, but urging senators to resist adding more sick time. So what did they do? So Schumer went trying to pretend he was doing a compromise. This is a pretend bill. He had two bills. One was the House bill to just pass it. The other was a Senate bill to... have a separate bill about sick leave. You know why? I tell you why. That's because the folks that were reticent about pushing back against the union needed to be able to go home and say, we tried to get some sick leave, man, but we couldn't get the Republicans on board. They wanted a separate bill to be able to claim they tried something when everybody knew it was going to fail. It even says right here in this article that it was being put up, but that it was expected to fail. Senator John Thune, Republican from South Dakota, says he thinks it's a bad precedent for us to get into the nuances and details of things that have been negotiated for 3 years, and that trying to add things to the plan would have been a bad idea in the first place. All right, so article right here from New York Magazine, and I'll wrap up with this. Why is sick leave such a big deal? Well, this is a very apologetic article. This is a very union-favorable article, but it was explanatory on the one thing here. They call it precision-scheduled railroading. All right. It says PSR, precision scheduled railroading, is an operational strategy that aims to minimize the ratio between railroads' operating costs and their revenues through various cost-cutting efficiency measures. Now, that's called running a good business, if you ask me. The basic idea, it says, is transport more freight using fewer workers and rail cars. Again, that's called efficiencies. One way to do this is making trains longer. Another way is to streamline scheduling so trains are running at full capacity as often as possible. That's called good business. All this, though, it says, has worked out poorly for rail workers. Over the past 6 years, America's major freight carriers have shed 30% of their employees. Well, I can see that being a problem for the employees, certainly. To compensate for lost staffing, remaining workers must then tolerate irregular schedules and little time off, and they have to schedule their sick leave in advance, which, it points out, almost requires them to be clairvoyant. Okay, I get it. There's going to have to be some means by which they can say, I got COVID, or I'm sick, or for that matter, I'm about to have my appendix taken out. I get it. I know why that's real life, and I know why it needs to happen. But you cannot say that running a business efficiently is somehow making them what this article calls railroad barons, intent upon, you know, keeping the little man under their thumb. And they even say, why do rail barons hate paid leave so much? Well, listen, they just gave them huge bonuses and lots of other opportunities. But yeah, there's that. All right, man. What a great show, Boomer. What a great show today.
It was a great show and a good fun show.
That was a good one. All right. Well, listen, that's a wrap. We are done for the day, but we're back tomorrow. Boomer and I are here tomorrow, too. You guys have an amazing night. We'll see you then. Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.